And we'll go straight over to our next guest, Andrew Katos, the state member for South Bowen. Andrew, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mitchell. How are you today?
Very well. Good to have you on the program.
Oh, pleasure to be on.
Now, Bev MacArthur's won that top spot in Western Victoria, and she's going to be replacing Simon Ramsay.
Yes, at the pre-selection yesterday. And look, Bev's been in the party for a long time, and she's an extremely hard worker. And I'm sure she'll make a very good upper house member there in the Geelong and region, and also right through the Western District.
It's going to be a very interesting time. We look forward to having her on the program. She represents more of a rural constituency. She lives sort of more out in Western Victoria, further into the sort of Western Districts.
Yeah, they're originally from MacArthur's there, got the Menengort there, property there just outside of Camperdown, but obviously Stuart was the member for Corangamite for many years, and I know they have a home here in Geelong as well, so they still have strong connections here in the Geelong region as well there, Mitchell.
Yeah, it's interesting times ahead, and obviously female, not that there necessarily has to be quotas or anything like that, but there's a lot of talk about whether there should be more female politicians in Parliament, particularly on the Conservative side.
Yeah, no, it's always good to get more women into Parliament, irrespective of what side of politics they're on, and I can assure you one thing, that Beverly MacArthur is certainly there on her merit. She's a very capable woman.
Now, the talk about energy has shifted to privatisation, in that the Labor government is sort of saying that privatisation is basically to blame for a lot of the problems. And in fact, we were told that before privatisation, prices would go down. And in fact, they've gone up. And even Samantha Ratnam, I noticed, the leader of the Greens, took aim at privatisation in her speech to the G21 stakeholder forum on Friday, which I saw you were at.
Yes, well, I suppose a couple of things there. The it was actually Joan Kerner that started this whole privatisation process, selling off power stations, so it was actually instigated by Labor. And also, with regard to privatisations, if Daniel Andrews is so opposed to privatisations and wants to keep everything in state ownership, why has he privatised the Port of Melbourne, and then why has he also, in the process of trying to privatise, the Land Titles Office? So if you apply the same argument that he's applying to power, that means the cost of our port will go up, and the cost of land titles will go up, according to his logic. So you can't say one thing and then do another, as Daniel Andrews does so frequently.
Nearly 20 years later, overall, do you think the energy privatisation has been a success or a failure?
Well, I think when you knock out almost a quarter of Victoria's power generation by... like Daniel Andrews did, just standing idly by and watching Hazelwood close, what did any normal person think was going to happen to power prices in this state, Mitchell? You knock out a quarter of supply, there's only one thing that happened, prices will go up.
So what's going to happen now with power prices? Because now, unfortunately, the federal government does seem to be in a bit of a shambles about this, and obviously they're trying to strike some sort of agreement with the states on this national energy guarantee, but it seems that all of that's been put on hold. So now there's even more uncertainty about power prices.
Well, yeah, look, it's more in the federal sphere there, but the reality is there, if you knock out base load power generation before this... any renewables or battery storage options to replace it, then there's only one thing could happen. Prices are going to go up. It's as simple as that. So it's fine to invest in renewables, no issue with that, but we have to build the capacity up before we start shutting down baseload power stations.
Are renewables, in fact, cheaper, like wind power, for example? Because I was listening to some analysis this morning which said that wind is currently $140 per megawatt hour and coal is more like $40.
Well, this is, I suppose, the argument that a lot of people say, that if renewables are so attractive, why do they have to have such massive government subsidies to make them viable? If they are indeed cheaper and stand on their own 2 feet, why do they need all these subsidies to get them onto the grid?
Now, the Bowen Heads Road duplication, some funding has been announced for that on Friday. Do you think that the Labor Party will match that commitment?
Oh, look, I don't know. They've had 4 years to do something about the Bowen Heads Road and have chosen to do nothing, absolutely nothing. We've seen tremendous growth in the southern suburbs of Geelong. The Liberal Party has made a $290 million commitment to... duplicate the Bowen Heads Road from Settlement Road through to Lower Mount Dunead Road. We will also remove the level crossing on the Bowen Heads Road at Marshall, and then Marshalltown Road will be upgraded, which is a significant black spot intersection, along with both reserve and boundary roads. So I've been lobbying for 4 years to get something done about the Bowen Heads Road. The Labor Party has done absolutely nothing. If we're elected in November, we will get on with the job and duplicate that road.
So just so we're clear, the study part has been done. This funding is actually to do it.
This is actually to build the road, correct.
And when will that start?
We will start there with the traffic light removal at Settlement Road, which is up near the Mercedes. Most people would know where the Mercedes dealership is. Because we want to start with that, because there's no point duplicating the road and then hurtling all this extra traffic to a choke point, because that intersection is a significant choke point. So under our proposal, Bowen Heads Road would continue through, so you'd go past the RSL down onto Kmart with no traffic lights, and there would be a flyover to connect you onto Latrobe Terrace, much like an interchange on a freeway, for example.
I see. How long would that take to finish? Because I presume if you're trying to remove the at-grade nature of it and have a grade-separated intersection, there's a lot of earthworks and such that would go into that.
Look, I must admit, Mitchell, I'm not the engineering expert about timeframes with that sort of stuff, but look, we'd want to get on with that one relatively quickly and get that intersection done, and then just once that's done, we start the duplication from the Settlement Road through to Lower Mount Dunead. So, as I said earlier, it'd be pointless to duplicate a road and hurdle all this extra traffic into a choke point.
Now, this bike lanes debate continues, and the council's released some mock-ups. Did you have a look at those mock-ups, and did you have any thoughts on...
I went along to an information session a couple of weeks ago up at the Belmont Library. The out of the options they're presenting to the public, I think only option one, I think, is viable.
Just for the listeners, which one is option one?
Which is basically having a shared area, so you slow the traffic down.
So that's to slow the traffic down and you have a bike lane on each side?
No, it's just basically the bike lanes. It's just as it is, effectively, but just calming the traffic and slowing it down.
Right.
And beautification of High Street. Look, one thing that the Liberal Party has said, that we will actually allow alternate routes to be chosen. So if council decides to, for example, use Francis Street or Church Street as the bike lanes, then we will permit that, because Daniel Andrews and Christine Cousins at the moment are refusing to allow alternate routes. The TAC's funding will actually be withdrawn if they move the bike lanes off High Street.
How important is High Street at the moment as a thoroughfare? I mean, do most people tend to use Settlement Road, and therefore, if we put in all of these traffic calming measures along High Street, it's not going to have any major traffic ramifications?
Look, it's still a significant thoroughfare, but my main concern around the bike lanes in High Street is the parking and the impact it will have on the numerous small businesses, particularly between Roslyn Road and Mount Pleasant Road. Having the car parking there, particularly with an older demographic in Belmont and Highton and Grovedale, they want to be able to park relatively close for obvious reasons. Obviously, people are a bit older, their mobility's not as good. And I'm really concerned that removing those bike lanes will have an adverse impact on trades, on small businesses and traders. And the last thing you want to see is that the shopping strip actually destroyed because of these bike lanes.
And, of course, the other question is, what's the current take-up rate of cycling like? I've seen some commentators say we haven't really seen the ones in Little Mallop Street being used yet, but then at the same time, that's only a very short stretch of road, so it's not going to make much of a difference, and I know it's part of a bigger plan, but I wonder what the take-up rate would be like.
Yeah, when I talk to traders, obviously I don't spend all my day in High Street. Used to spend a bit more time there when the office was there.
Yeah.
But a lot of the traders are saying, quite frankly, that they rarely see a cyclist using High Street. That's the traders talking to me. So they're there every day looking at the street, so they would know it better than I would.
Now, there's an article in today's Geelong Advertiser ruling out this idea of having more standing room on V-Line trains. I wonder if you think it's a good idea to have more standing rooms as a way of trying to ease congestion, because just last week I was going to pick someone up from a train station, Corio Station, in fact, and their V-Line service from Southern Cross got cancelled due to a broken door or something, and that means that two trains had to be merged into one during peak hour. Basically, that service got cancelled, and apparently it was a crush. There was barely even room for people to stand without spilling out of the carriages.
Well, look. I suppose first and foremost, we have to fix our train service too, between Geelong and Melbourne. We've got Jacinta Allen, who's the transport minister. I would actually venture to say one of the most incompetent transport ministers this state has ever seen. Everything she touches, she botches. And we've seen performances on the Geelong line go backwards under her watch. And it's quite shambolic. If it's not sick drivers, it's problems with trains. If it's not trains, it's problems with the tracks. There's always some excuse why this system is not working properly. And that's what we need to do, is get on with the job of actually fixing the system we've got.
Well, we have to just about leave it there, Andrew. Sorry to cut it a little bit short, but the news is coming up at 10. But always good to catch up with you, and we'll do so again next month.
Not a problem, Mitchell. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrew Kados, our state member for South Barwon.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.